Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So I promised today would be the best. Save the best for last, but I have some bad news. Would you like the bad news first or last? I have some good news also, but I have some bad news. Yeah, that wasn't so smart, but I think for us bad news is better first. But then we can figure out how to resolve the problem. The bad news is coming up. Okay. You ready for the bad news? Very bad news about humility. This is from the Naradiya Purana. This is from the Naradiya Purana. Actually, it's the Hari Bhakti Shuddhodaya, and the Hari Bhakti Shuddhodaya is part of the Naradiya Purana. Who can conquer pride? It is unconquerable, even by great personalities. Class is over. We give up. Well, I have a class on humility. It's impossible, right? Having attacked in many ways, the fire of pride resides within men, continuously destroying the auspiciousness in their lives. Having attacked in many ways. The fire of pride resides within men, continuously destroying the auspiciousness in their lives. Pride may be due to scholarship, caste, knowledge, wealth, beauty, fame, strength, or any similar quality. After experiencing it, in other words, after experiencing pride, the taste of pride, who here in this world can be free from its clutches? It's so sweet, isn't it? Give me more, give me more. It gets worse. If you think that's bad, it gets worse. Because then you think, well, I can take to devotional service, and then by taking to devotional service, I'll get free from it. One may give up the pride of possessing wealth, but the pride of thinking oneself to be the possessor of good qualities or being a great renunciate will continue. So then I cultivate knowledge and renunciation, and then pride creeps in, and I think, I'm very learned, I'm very renounced. Gets worse. Understanding the pitfalls of pride, some people do not like to hear others speaking their praise. So this seems good. We understand the pitfalls of pride, and then people may praise us, and we don't like hearing it. Yet, understanding the pitfalls of pride, some people do not like to hear others speaking their praise. Yet, If someone says, you are so humble that you don't want to hear your own glorification, they become very pleased to hear that. That's just what I wanted to hear. It does get worse. There's one more verse. Two more verses. Yeah, it gets worse. Prabhu, you are so humble. Yes, I know. What a wonder it is that although a yogi who has acquired tranquility of mind may have given up all egotism and vanity from his heart, yet still he may feel proud thinking, I am a knower of the truth. It says here, he's given up all egotism and vanity. Yet still he may feel proud thinking, I am a knower of the truth. In other words, the supreme paradox, that you finally come to the point where you begin to overcome the desire for pride, and then you become proud of that. You become proud that you overcame the desire for pride. Where does it end? Some persons have managed to give up all kinds of pride and worldly attachments, yet pride still affects them as they think, I don't have any material attachments. I have no material attachments. So, what are we going to do? I'll read that again. Some persons have managed to give up all kinds of pride and worldly attachments, yet pride still affects them as they think, I have no material attachments. So what's being said here is that it's possible as we advance in Krishna consciousness that we become proud of the advancement we're making. Supreme paradox. Have any of you ever felt like that? Have any of you here not felt like that? Some sense of pride in your spiritual progress? I mean, there is, Prabhupada says, there is pride in being a devotee. I'm a devotee. I have a great spiritual master. I'm a devotee of Krishna. My Krishna is wonderful. Devotees are wonderful, the movement is wonderful. There's that kind of pride. But this is different, because one is proud of their own advancement. So, should we end class now and give up? Is there any hope for us? No? Well, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he spoke a lot about pridelessness. And I would like to read something, not what I planned to read, what I told you I was going to read, but something else. And he did have faith that by the process of Krishna consciousness we could become free. At least we should try. So he says, we should not be proud and think, I am expert, intelligent, a good speaker, and a good singer. These thoughts are adverse to devotional service. We need to feel ourselves lower than the straw in the street. If anyone attacks us or criticizes us, we should tolerate it and simply chant Hari's holy name. We should think that today the Lord has mercifully awarded us the opportunity to become humbler than a blade of grass. When someone, this is Maharaj, the question you were asking the other day, even if someone says something and it's not true. And he's saying, oh, just see, this is an opportunity to become humbler than a blade of grass. When somebody blasphemes us, we should know that the Lord is awarding us a benediction through those from whom trouble is inevitable. In other words, some people will just disturb us. And we think, Krishna is showing me mercy. He's helping me become humble. The first point he's making here is, if we think I am a great this or that, so that's adverse to devotional service. Later he said something really wonderful. You could make a t-shirt out of this. He said, do not think you're, he said, don't try to be great, just try to be good. Now try to be a good devotee, but don't try to be a great devotee. Great devotee means I'm trying to be better than everyone. But good devotee means I'm following my guru. And so try to follow these instructions. So it appears that we can do this because he's telling his disciples to do it. And if it was hopeless, he wouldn't tell them. But he's making it clear to think that you're good, you know, I'm good at this means I'm better than others, I'm special. That's adverse to the mentality of a devotee. That's adverse, he says it's adverse to devotional service. And then, think yourself lower than the straw in the street. So last night we did a program and someone said, but that's artificial. Right? I mean, how can I think I'm lower than the straw in the street? Or I'm the most fallen? That's artificial. And I said, well, actually, pretty much everything's artificial when you look at what we're trying to achieve. It all looks pretty artificial, doesn't it? You know, pure bhakti, it's way up here and we're down here. So then I quoted Bhakti Siddhanta who said, be real about where you're at and act accordingly. It's okay, I can be real, I don't feel humbler than the strong street, but that's the goal, that I should feel that way. So, you know, he's telling us, this is you're here, but... You know, this is, be real about where you're at, but this is where you want to go to someday, somehow. Then, a disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, what's the difference between being weak and being deceitful? Because we've been talking about humility being defined, one of the definitions is humility is reality. Just be real about where you're at. And deceit means, as we were discussing yesterday, we want people to believe something about us that may not be true. I want you to think I'm an uttama adhikari, but after the class, I go out and have a cigarette. Or I call up my girlfriend. So that's deceitful. So he was asked the question, is there a difference between being spiritually weak and being deceitful? And he replied, weakness is one thing and deceitfulness is another. They're not the same. Good things happen only to a person free from deceitfulness. Then he said something amazing. He said, another name for straightforwardness, which means to not be deceitful, to not be pretentious, don't pretend you're somebody you're not, just be who you are, don't show off. Another name for straightforwardness is Vaishnavata, or the quality of a Vaishnava. Amazing, huh? Vaishnavata is another name for straightforwardness. So that's the quality of a devotee. They're not duplicitous. They're not appearing to be one thing and acting in another way. A straightforward person can be weak, but he is not deceitful. So you made this, he said, all right, weakness, that's weakness is kind of normal. We're conditioned. But deceitfulness is a conscious effort to deceive people. For the purpose of being glorified or honored. There's a difference. 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna says, sometimes my devotee, although he understands that material existence is full of suffering, he can't control himself and he engages in material activities, but he regrets it. And then Prabhupada says, at least if you're not adverse to the principle of pure bhakti, then you'll achieve success because you know that's where you want to go. So that's totally different. He's just weak. He's not trying to get people to believe he's not weak. He's not consciously trying to be weak. It's just the conditioning. He goes on to say, I will hide the poisonous snakes of my bad tendencies in the dark recess of hypocrisy. I will hide the poisonous snakes of my deceitfulness in the dark recess of hypocrisy and will not let anyone know about them. So I'm committing sinful activity or I'm doing something which is against devotional principles, but I'll hide that. I won't let anybody know. And I will get some name and fame from other people by pretending to be saintly. This is not a sign of weakness, but of terrible deceitfulness. If for millions of births we have some weakness, some bad habits, that is not so harmful. But if once we take to the path of deceitfulness, we pretend to be devotees but secretly engage in sinful enjoyment, then all troubles will remain with us. And so what we've been talking about is, and what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta has been saying is, humility means to be aware of your own defects and then deal with them and act to become purified. Admit them, acknowledge them. I was recently in Bangalore and a devotee was asking a question about this. So I was explaining to him that a lot of times when we have defects, we're afraid to acknowledge them because the defect is something a devotee shouldn't have. If I have a particular defect or I have a particular attitude or a particular desire or perhaps I'm extremely jealous or envious. So when confronted with that, I tend to push it away because as a devotee, I know I shouldn't be envious, right? So I see another devotee and I'm envious of this devotee. And I think that's bad. So I kind of buried that. And I was telling him, that's not the proper attitude. The proper attitude is to acknowledge that you're envious. Deeply acknowledge that. Because by acknowledging it, then you can begin to deal with it. And if we don't acknowledge it, we don't deal with it. And that's why some devotees will say, you know, I had this problem 20 years ago and I still have it today and it doesn't seem to go away. Because every time the problem comes, you try to push it away because you think it's, I shouldn't think like that or I shouldn't feel that way. So you never deal with it. Yes. Is there a microphone? Oh, there's a microphone.
Sorry to interrupt, but I was you just hit something that just sparked in my mind.
Yes.
And there's a way of instant observation of enviousness when it appears. If you hear something bad about somebody and you feel good, then you know you're envious.
Then you know.
Or if you hear something good about somebody and you feel bad.
I love that, isn't that? And then we hear something bad about someone and we feel good and then we don't even think there's anything wrong with that. That's even worse. At least sometimes you feel bad but you don't want to deal with it because you think, well, I just feel bad and I don't want to think about it. But this is worse. You don't even feel bad. You feel good. Yes. Deal with it means to acknowledge. Like I would, in this case, the case that Maharaj is bringing up. Let's say someone's speaking ill of someone, and I feel very happy. Then I should, if I'm properly situated, I should think, oh, that must mean I'm envious of this person, or that must mean I'm jealous, or there must be some resentment in me, right? So that I acknowledge that. And I acknowledge that, and then I say, this is not good. And I begin confronting this reality. One way to confront it is just, what is the consequence of thinking this way? How does this make me feel? How is this affecting my consciousness? How is this affecting my life in general? And the point I was making is that because envy, for example, is something against bhakti, we don't want to confront it because we think by confronting it, it will get worse. But actually, that's how you work through it, by acknowledging it. Like you see in the poems of the Acharyas, it's I'm deceitful, I'm a cheater. You know, they're confronting their qualities. They're actually telling Krishna, this is what I'm like. Because there's a saying, I think I mentioned this, you're only as sick as your secret. So, you know, I'm envious, but I don't acknowledge it. So it's like a secret. I don't tell anybody, and I need to bring that secret out into the open and share that with another devotee, at least share it with myself and begin to work on it. But if we don't acknowledge it and we don't begin to deal with it, and then we go on thinking, actually, I'm a very good devotee. Even though I'm envious, I'm lustful, I'm angry, I'm resentful, because I don't acknowledge that I am, and I think, well, you know, I go to Mangalarti every day. I just read this thing a Christian wrote. He said, you don't become spiritually advanced just by going to church, just like you don't become a car by standing in a garage. You don't become spiritually advanced, you don't automatically become spiritually advanced by going to church or going to temple, just like you don't become a car just by standing in a garage. You know, by standing in a church, you don't become a saint, just as you don't become a car by standing in a garage.
Car park.
Yeah, or a car park. Yes? We don't want to be hypocrites, we want to acknowledge the bad qualities we have, what we're struggling with.
Yeah, but
please use the mic because people online say it
here. Oh, I can repeat it, it's okay. No. Yeah, but?
Yeah, you say we are on the path, as you said.
We're on the path, right?
We are on the path of spiritual upliftment or whatever.
Becoming purified.
Yeah, we are not pure. Just like when we join, we are not pure. We are dealing with our weaknesses. And so, why doesn't everyone accept?
Why doesn't?
Everyone accept that somebody...
Oh, why don't we accept? Why don't we accept in others?
Yeah, that somebody is struggling with
yes.
this and somebody is struggling with that.
Why are we not so accepting?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that later. I mean, there are many reasons. And she's asking if everyone is... Like we said yesterday, everybody's in the hospital. Bhaktisiddhanta said, you know, everyone's in the hospital, so why are we not accepting that they're diseased? You really want to know why? Because when we do not resolve our own defects, it bothers us when we see those same defects in other people. That's one reason. Another reason is because we're not humble. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, we said yesterday, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I should not think I'm a devotee. Because when I think I'm a devotee, then I find fault with others. So finding fault means you're judging. And Bhaktivinoda said, humility means not judging. I have no right to judge. Can I read a poem? Shivananda, I rewrote that poem. Shivananda sent me a poem. It was written by a Christian, and I rewrote it. And now's a good time to read it. All I have to do is find it. He sent me a poem, written by a Christian, but I had to rewrite it. And this is about judgment. I was shocked, confused, bewildered as I entered Goloka's door. Not by the beauty of it all, nor the lights, or its decor. But it was the devotees in Goloka that I was amazed to see. I knew them all on earth, but they had so little bhakti. There stood my Sankirtan leader, the one who stole Krishna's money twice. Next to him was my old TP, who was never, ever nice. Krishnadas, who never preached, who seemed so insincere, was sitting ecstatically with Krishna, to whom he seemed so dear. I asked my guru, "What's going on?" Of this, I don't know what to make. How'd all these devotees end up here? Did someone make a mistake? And why is everyone so quiet, so somber? Give me a clue. "Quiet, Prabhu," he said. "They're all in shock. No one thought they'd be seeing you." The moral of the story? Judge not. Judge not. And so here we have the further moral. A temple is not a museum of saints, but a hospital for sinners. Every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. Thank you, Shivananda. We had to rewrite it, but I think it's better now.
Make that poem public, please.
What?
Publicize that poem.
Okay. We'll put it on the internet, on Facebook. Okay, you wanted to say something? No, I'm finished with this. Yeah. Okay.
Just another reason to add to that list of why we don't acknowledge our faults is it interferes with our plans for sense gratification.
Interferes with our plans for sense gratification. Yes.
As we start to, then we have to work on that instead of what we want or what we think we should do.
Yes. Yeah. It's no fun to work on our faults. I think it's also not fun to acknowledge that we're faulty. That shatters our self-conception. But it's a relief. I think that's one of the things that we can take from this seminar. It's a relief to think I'm faulty, because then I don't have to pretend to be something I'm not. And that takes a lot of energy to pretend. I could use that energy for being Trinadapi Sunichena instead of pretending I'm something I'm not. Now, I'd like to read you something that Bhaktisiddhanta wrote. This is all I haven't read, but I promised you I was going to read. This is just warming up. He talked about the attitude of a devotee who lives in a temple. They call their temples mats. And so mat is a Sanskrit word. It means an institution where education goes on, and then and a place where a guru lives or an acharya lives. The mat vasi's attitude should be, no one knows when and to whom Sri Guru Gauranga will shower their mercy. Any patient, and he compared the mat to a hospital, just like in this poem, any patient may achieve the mercy, become healthy, and attain seva adhikara, the qualification to serve, before I attain it. So I should not criticize or find fault with others. Nice. No one knows to whom Sri Guru and Gauranga will shower their mercy. Any patient may achieve the mercy, become healthy, and attain the qualification to serve before I achieve it. So I should not criticize or find fault with others. When I read this, I was reminded of the book on Lord Nisringa, of these special devotees who had darshan and dreams of Lord Nisringa. Some of them, we might think, are just ordinary devotees, a simple brahmachari or some simple devotee living in the temple. And I think, that never happened to me. So who are these special souls? We don't know. So we don't know how advanced everyone is. We tend to judge others by our own advancement, but we don't know. Referring to senior devotees in the math who may have to correct or teach others, he said, externally he may play the part of a teacher, but internally he is never deviated from the consciousness that he is a student, a servant of the spiritual master. He never deviates from the consciousness that he is a student, a servant of the spiritual master. And then he said, if he's in this position, he'll never fall down. I'm just a student. But externally, I have to play the part of a teacher. But I'm just a student. Then he'll never fall down. And then he talks about good and great. He endeavors to be good instead of great. He prays for the mercy of Sri Guru and Gauranga to help him give up his attitude of being a controller and to increase his humility. Humility and the mood of service is the ornament of a mat vasi. Humility and the mood of service is the ornament of the mat vasi. It's the ornament of the Vaishnava. Any questions on that or comments? Nice principles by which to run a temple. Should I read the poem again? This reminds me. Anyone who wants any of these files, I will email them to you. We can pass this around. Anything I'm reading from, and probably I have more than I've read from, if you give me your email address, I can send it to you. But make sure to write clearly, because sometimes, here's a pencil also, sometimes it's difficult to read. So now I'm going to get to the real nectar, what I found to be the real nectar. So, the question was posed to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And this devotee was saying, when I first became a devotee, I saw the other devotees and I had great hope and enthusiasm in bhakti by seeing them. I had great respect for them. You remember when you first joined the temple, how much you respected the devotees? And then sometime later, what happened? Some doubt perhaps came that they're not as advanced as I thought. So this question was posed to him. He said, I had great hope, you know, in bhakti by noticing the characters and the enthusiasm of the devotees, but now I'm losing hope because I see so many of the brahmacharis have gone back home, they become married, etc. like that. So then Bhakti Siddhanta, he expresses how we should think. And he said, I am unable to say that it becomes necessary to give up the service of Hari if one becomes a householder. In other words, first there was that doubt that this is a big fall down, right? So knowing the mentality of the person, he's saying, well, I don't see that they've given up the service of Hari. I don't see it's a fall down. On my part, around me, I see many wonderful Vaishnavas. I find that their devotion has grown more. Two people looking at the same thing. If you were in the forgiveness seminar, you learned that we have a saying that nothing means anything until you show up. Nothing means anything till you show up. And then you figure out what it means. So here the devotee is saying, oh, I see these devotees are getting married and the enthusiasm is not the way it used to be, therefore that means things are getting bad and I'm losing hope. And Bhaktisiddhanta is reflecting on the proper mentality. No, what I see is I see that there's many wonderful devotees and their Vaishnavism is growing. And then he's saying, how to think. He said, what a great Pasandi I was before I joined the monk. What a great atheist I was. And now see how my impiety has diminished by associating with them. In other words, instead of saying what's wrong with them, he's saying, I was an atheist, I was a Pasandi, and I've joined the Mat, and now by their association, my impiety is gradually diminishing. See, that's how you were supposed to think. You know, in other words, I told this story, I'll tell it again, it's such a good story. In the forgiveness seminar, or some other seminar I told this story, but a lot of you weren't there. So two devotees are traveling, they're 2,000 miles away from their temple. And one devotee's in charge, and the second devotee doesn't like the devotee who's in charge, doesn't want to accept his authority, he's always arguing with him. So the whole time they're traveling, they don't get along. And so one of the devotees is dropped off in the morning to do Sankirtan, and the devotee who drops him off has the van, and he says, I'll pick you up at 7 o'clock. So he comes back at 7 o'clock, and he can't find the devotee. And that was in the day before there were cell phones. So he didn't know how to contact him. So he drove around to some shopping centers near there, thinking maybe that's where he'll be. Couldn't find him. 8 o'clock at night, couldn't find him. 9 o'clock at night, couldn't find him. And so these are young devotees. They're in a city, thousands of miles from the nearest temple. And independently, they both begin thinking, oh no, what if I have to stay in this city alone? What if I can't find the other devotee? I mean, maybe I'll end up in the bar. Maybe I'll go see a prostitute. I don't know what I'll do. I don't trust myself. I'm not that advanced. And I'm all alone in this city. These are young devotees. So they both had the same thoughts. And these are the two devotees that really couldn't stand traveling with one another. So finally, somehow or other, they met. You know, they thought, you know, they met like 10 o'clock at night, and they thought, that's it, we're lost. I don't know when we're going to find one another. And I'm really afraid what I might do tonight. And they finally found one another, and they appreciated so much how their association was actually saving them. So they were actually saving one another by their association. So that's what Bhaktisiddhanta is saying here. So you were looking at all the faults of these devotees, but he's saying, really, it's because of these devotees that I'm a devotee. I mean, it's true. Could any of us be a devotee without the devotees? Even the devotees you don't like, right? It's because of the devotees you don't like, you're still a devotee. If the only devotees left on the planet were the ones you don't like, what would you do? Would you decide not to be a devotee? No, you'd associate. How greatly my impiety has diminished by associating with them. I find that although I am adverse to Godhead, they are serving Hari. So this kind of answers your question, but you're saying, well, we're all works in progress and we have bad qualities. Why do we point them out? And he's going way beyond that. He's not even dealing with that. He's saying, I am adverse to Krishna consciousness and they're all doing service. Normally we think, why are these devotees as sincere as I am? Why aren't these devotees as fired up as I am? What's wrong with them? What's wrong with you, Prabhupada? Why aren't you as humble as I am? And he's saying, ah, just look. I am adverse to serving Krishna. I am proud. I am envious. And they're serving so nicely. I have been enabled to know by the mercy of the lotus feet of Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami that he never lent his ears to listen to the tidings of condemnable actions of the Vaishnavas. And that it sufficed for him to know only this much, that all serve Krishna. And then you see, like here, especially in Mayapur, what devotee would come to Mayapur if they didn't have some sincerity? There's no way they'd come here. I mean, maybe some rare soul might be here trying to take advantage or something, but especially here in Mayapur, where's the question of finding a fault? Anyone who comes here must be sincere, isn't it? Otherwise, why would you, if you weren't sincere, you'd be in the West making money, right? Watching television, going to the movies. I find that everyone is serving Hari by making progress on the path of devotion. Only no benefit has accrued to me. How many of you think like that? I mean, he's showing here this is what humility is. And he, like he's like we read the other day, don't just talk about humility. You have to practice it. He's showing this is what humility is. You know, we think humility is Hare Krishna Prabhu and like this. And he's showing this is the attitude. The first day, remember I said, it's the attitude. The attitude. These are sincere devotees. I am so unfortunate. I don't have the sincerity. I don't have the dedication. I don't have the devotion of these other devotees. The household of Godhead has prospered in every way because of these sincere devotees. ISKCON has so many wonderful devotees. Only no benefit is accrued to me. The problem with ISKCON is I am not a devotee. That's the problem. Right? Prabhu, what's the problem with ISKCON? Problem is I'm not a devotee. That's the problem. Should we make flags, make them go on a march? Kirtan march? Problem with ISKCON is I'm not a devotee. All have been undoubtedly benefited. You have become agitated by small insufficiencies. In other words, you're looking at little things in the devotee. Insufficiencies. Just minor things. And so you become agitated. Your anxiety for serving Godhead is very great. And now he's actually glorifying this devotee. Now he's saying, you've seen some small defect and you've become agitated, but really what he means is you're in anxiety that Krishna be served greatly. So you want to see everyone serving him. It is for this reason that you want that they should serve Hari in still greater measure. So now he's glorifying this devotee. He's not even saying you're a fault finder. He's saying, oh, I can see that you want everyone to advance. You're finding some fault. Oh, you want to see them advance more. You're unable to feel satisfied even when you find in them the very act of serving. Well, now he's chastising him. It is for this reason that you want they should serve Hari in greater measure. You are unable to feel satisfied. Maybe he's chastising the whole time and I'm misreading this. You are unable to feel satisfied even when you find them in the very act of serving Hari. You want that they should serve the Lord of your... No, he's glorifying him. You want that they should serve the Lord of your life with a billionfold greater devotion. No, he's chastising him. He's saying, so you see, you know, there's some defect, some little defect, and you're agitated. You want them to serve on this higher level. You're unable to feel satisfied when you find in them the very act of serving Hari. You want them, they should serve the Lord of your life with a billionfold greater devotion. But my heart is a little one. My vessel is small. In other words, he's saying, I don't expect that from these people. So I have a small vessel. So you have a big one. You want to fill it up with this high level of devotion, then you'll be satisfied. Mine's very small. It is for this reason that I am unable to contain their great service in my small vessel. Now, I see them, and I see wonderful service. So my appreciation for them is overflowing. You understand, Madhurya Lila? His He's pointing out this other devotee, he sees a little defect, and he has such a high expectation for what devotional service is, he can't appreciate it, because he gets focused on the defect. And he's saying, but I see the service they're doing is very, very great. That whatever they're doing, I see is great. But you want to see something very spectacular for you to be satisfied. You know, well, you know, I saw, you know, Maharaj was, you know, chanting his rounds and he was talking to somebody. That's the problem with our movement. Even the leaders, you know, they're talking during japa. Why is this going on? I'll finish with this kind of. Like that, you know. Whereas Bhakti Siddhanta is saying, you know, if you see that, you think, oh, Maharaj must be talking about something so, he must be, this devotee he's talking to must be having a serious problem and he's helping him and he's so compassionate that he'll talk to him even during his japa. I wish I had that compassion. He's saying, that's how we're supposed to think. You see? Their endeavor for the service of Hari is overflowing my little cup. It's like I'm just appreciating so much their service. I feel it impossible any longer to keep squeezed within the limits of my small vessel the vastness of their service. They're doing so much service and I'm doing so little. It's just overwhelming me. They are fast passing away, setting an example of the most wonderfully ideal life of service. I alone am unable to serve Hari. I alone am busy to detect the defects of others. I ought to have progressed on the path of service, but I have chosen to be busy in searching for the defects of the Vaishnavas instead. Hare Krishna. I want to read that again. And then in other words, he's seeing this, the question that the, or the statement this devotee made, he's seeing the defect. And so now he's telling this devotee, this is how I see it. You see it this way. Nothing means anything till you show up. So you showed up and you've seen it this way. You've seen this devotees. This is what you see. You see defects. You see lacks. You see shortcomings. You're losing hope. And this is how I see it. Their endeavor for the service of Hari is overflowing my little cup. It's so much more than I expect. I feel it impossible any longer to keep squeezed within the limits of my small vessel, the vastness of their service. They are fast passing away, setting an example of the most wonderfully ideal life of service. I alone am unable to serve Hari. I alone am busy to detect the defects of others. I ought to have progressed on the path of service, but I have chosen to be busy in searching for the defects of Vaishnavas instead. So now he's saying, if we're actually advancing in the path of bhakti, we don't find the defects. You know, we find fault and it's just like, big deal. No problem. And here he's saying, no, it is a problem. This is a sign that we're not advancing. Yes?
It seems like one who is very advanced, even a small service for others would be highly appreciated.
One who's very advanced appreciates any small service of another, yes?
And a neophyte, even if a devotee is doing big service, he can't.
Yeah,
can't appreciate.
So we can't appreciate. And so he's saying a neophyte cannot appreciate the service of another devotee. I think it's due to envy, isn't it? Maharaj, you want to say something? Well, he's asking how we can come to that position. How do we turn it around so we appreciate
it? Yes. It reminds me of a statement I heard by Prabhupada that Krishna sees all service as equal. He doesn't consider, he said, you may be the pujari and worshipping the deity so nicely and someone else is just out cleaning the temple, but Krishna doesn't see that. He sees the mood of service, not so much the service. So if we simply take Prabhupada's clear, you know, perfect understanding of Krishna's vision, then we have no problem, right?
Yeah, and I was also thinking while you were saying that, I was thinking how, like, if you see a defect, you're making an assumption there's a defect there. And one psychologist said, the only way you could know it's a defect is by the familiarity with yourself of having that defect. Otherwise, why would you think the defect is there unless you're familiar with it yourself? So then I was thinking, okay, here we have this problem where you could look at somebody and they're doing service and you might think, yeah, they're doing service, but they're not sincere, or they're not this or that. And so that's an attitude, right? And the same way you could see, just look at that nice service. I appreciate that so much. So why can't you think like that? Just as easily, right? If, as Maharaj is saying, everything is equally appreciable, then why not just have the attitude of appreciation? And I find for myself, that helps me so much in Krishna consciousness, because it humbles me when I appreciate another devotee, and then I become anxious to say, I would like to be sincere like that devotee. Yes?
I'm just considering, you know, that if everyone has this mode of appreciating other service, there's got to be some people who see the, you know, when somebody's going off, that things are not right, you know, this is, you know, they shouldn't be doing like this, you know, because we do know the history of our movement, you know, like some people get in trouble and they say, well, look, why didn't you stop them? You saw them doing like that, why didn't you do something?
Right. So, we did talk about this a little bit the other day. Of course, that's the position of a guru, or the teacher, Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru, leader, to correct. But at the same time, I think we were talking about, I think, someone brought up the point, what about with friends? Because you can say, right, real friendship would be to help somebody. You see somebody walking off the edge of the roof, you want to stop them. Yeah, so
you're giving examples. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada saying like this, you know. So he, you know, he's the guru, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So who's there? You know,
he's paying, his disciples are paying obeisances, and he's paying obeisances back. And they're paying obeisances, and he's saying, Vasosmi, I'm your servant. But part of his service is to correct them.
I think it's the mood and the attention, how you do it, and that makes the difference whether it's actually devotional service or just another form of fault finding.
Yes.
I'll give you an example. This morning, and I'll put myself on the line and show you how offensive I was. This morning, somebody's really, really talking during the Sringa Arati with somebody else, and I was getting really upset, so I didn't say anything. I mean, really going. So then they said, Vrindai Tulsi Devi, and everybody got down, and the person kept talking during that. So I went over and boom, on his back like that. I jumped. And I realized, maybe I committed an offense. I shouldn't have did that. He stopped, but I was disturbed. So I was thinking, oh, Krishna, maybe I offended this person. But they were so out of order that maybe I did the right thing, but maybe I didn't do it in the right way. So I was in Guru Puja later, so Krishna put me in the same situation again. This time it was two godbrothers. And they were talking during Guru Puja. So I was thinking, okay, Krishna, you did it to me again. Now what do I do? So I just went around and I just very sweetly started to worship them. And then they got the idea, oh, we should be worshiping Prabhupada instead of worshiping talking. So somehow in that dynamics of correcting, I put myself in a point of correcting. I realized the first time I was offensive in correcting the person. The second time they both appreciated that. They said, thank you very much. So, that's a personal example that I had this morning. And so I think it's how you do it, or it's also on how people receive what you do. the first person didn't receive it so nicely.
Yeah, very. Thank you for that. It's very nice. If a devotee feels that we have their interest in mind,
yeah. And I think that's important, because if you don't, you can commit an offense by trying to correct a person that seems to be offensive. And so you...
Yes. Yeah. Two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah, exactly.
And Prabhupada also said, he said, also if you want to correct, you have to behave properly. Because they'll be more likely to hear from you if you're behaving well. So like you say, Maharaj, yes, there has to be people who have to do that service. Bhaktisiddhanta therefore said it's a thankless task. Because he said it's thankless because it's not the mentality of the Vaishnava to criticize. But somebody has to do it. Someone has to correct. And so therefore, anyone who's doing that correction has to have the best interest of that devotee in mind. If we try to correct without that interest, then it can be very problematic. Yes?
It appears to me in this statement that you're reading, and I may be wrong, so feel free to correct me, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj is speaking very much on the level of a very advanced devotee, like, you know, he always was, but he's actually letting that come through, as speaking as a Nuttama Adhikari. But he did have some other elements in place, like his managers knew if someone is more attached to sense gratification, don't keep them in the mats and in the dham. Send them to Bombay. And different things we read about just a couple of days ago.
Right.
So he did sometimes borrow the hat of the Madhyama Adhikari to set things in motion. He didn't necessarily always act on that level of being completely accepting and seeing everyone as being an elevated soul. Just for management purpose, he borrowed that. And we saw that also with Srila Prabhupada. Although he was most elevated, there was time where he would come down to our platform for management purpose. And then he could just go back to being himself. So it's not that really when he is in a position where he's saying, this is wrong and this is right, that he's not elevated anymore. It's just borrowing that attitude for the purpose of management.
Yeah, and it's only apparently external.
Internally, he's still feeling I'm a small vessel.
Yeah, and I'm a servant, as we read. Yeah, I'm just a servant. I'm serving you by pointing out your defects. Because I love you. As we said yesterday, when Prabhupada chastises a devotee, Prabhupada said the devotee should feel I'm very fortunate my spiritual master is taking time to correct me.
Yeah, and that's another point when it comes time to correcting. Those who are here who just took the Bhakti Sadachar would remember that in correcting anyone, one very important ingredient is that there has to be a relationship. Or at least faith must be there. There has to be some connection. Otherwise the correcting is no power. Has no power.
It seems when I was reading this, it seems that because fault finding is such a big problem and it's so detrimental to bhakti, he's going out of his way to stress the proper attitudes in general for devotees. And then for management, then you have relative considerations. And here he's presenting absolute consideration. This is the absolute consideration. But then there's management. And then someone has to do that dirty work. And the compassionate devotees can do that. One who has a heart to help has the right to criticize. He goes on. Who are those that try to find the drawbacks of the Vaishnavas? They are the community of empiricists whose only resource consists of the eye, ear, nose, etc., deluded by external objects. In short, all those who are adverse to the service of Hari. When anyone tells me that a particular person has given up chanting the name of Hari, I think in my mind that the service of Hari of such a person must have certainly increased to an extraordinary extent that his heart must have been very much improved, and that it is for this reason he has been enabled to be engaged in other work by giving up the service of Hari, which is the only path to well-being. He has grown immensely wealthy. He has been satisfied and therefore does not want to undergo the trouble of earning more riches. Did you understand that? You see someone who's stopped chanting, and so you become critical. And he's saying, this person has become so advanced in Krishna consciousness, they're so wealthy in bhakti that they don't even need to chant anymore, that their riches are overflowing. So he said, that's how I see it. Is that amazing? Sri Bhagavan has said in the Gita that no harm can ever befall the devotees of Godhead, that they can never die. My devotee is not destroyed. Even if one whose habits of life are highly condemnable serve me with the singleness of purpose, he should certainly be considered as righteous. His conduct is surely altogether perfect. He becomes virtuous in no time and quickly attains the eternal peace of the soul. Son of Kunti, do thou know for certain my devotee never comes to grief. So in other words, he's saying that even if you see somebody, he said this elsewhere, doing something that doesn't look devotional, because they're engaged in devotional service, that's their main purpose, to be engaged in devotional service, you should know by that process they're advancing. And then Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, in his comment to this verse, says that you should know that all good qualities will develop even if they're not manifest yet, because they're in the process. That's how we think, oh, I see some defect, but he's engaged in devotional service, so I know all good qualities will come by bhakti. So why am I so worried? Can those who serve with singleness of heart ever fall from devotion? They have certainly gained a state of well-being. My eyesight is bad. It is for this reason that I am unable to obtain my own good. In other words, he's saying, I'm doing myself harm because I don't see the good in others. This life is of short duration. Even in that short space, we are continuously and actively engaged in the realm of Devi, in the enjoyment of the objects of this world, and for the purpose of seeking out the defect of other people, and becoming thereby a supreme example of the utter absence of the quality of humility greater than that of a blade of grass. So now he hits it on the head, because here he's saying, seeking out the defects of other people, you become the supreme example of the utter absence of the quality of humility. I mean, do you ever think that way when you're finding fault with someone? That you're being proud? That you're lacking humility? I don't. It doesn't dawn on me like that. And here he's saying, this is what's happening. So you're asking, why do we find fault? Well, one of the reasons we find fault, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, is we have no humility. Even in that short space, the short duration of life, we are continuously and actively engaged in the realm of Devi, in the enjoyment of the objects of this world, and for the purpose of seeking out the defects of other people, and becoming thereby a supreme example of the utter absence of the quality of humility greater than that of a blade of grass. At the lotus feet of Sri Guru, there is no search for the defects of other people. In other words, he's saying, when you become a disciple, when you're serving the Guru, You don't search for defects in other people. That's not seva. Yet there is no other function of submission at the lotus feet of Sri Guru than to be constantly made aware of my hundreds of thousands of defects and to be cautioned constantly against any evil that is likely to befall me. So, service to Guru means I do not see others' defects, but I become aware of my thousands. What does he say here? Hundreds of thousands of defects. May we not be deprived of the ideal of sitting at the lotus feet of Sri Guru. I will give up criticizing other people. Quote, I am very clever. I am very learned, very intelligent. I am a great speaker. That person is illiterate and foolish and cannot properly talk about anything. Such talk is out of place. If we try to diminish the practice of discussing the defects of other people in this manner and discourse only about Hari instead, I think it will do us good. That's it. So if someone asks you, what is humility? According to this definition, it's simply stop seeing the defects in others, see their good qualities, and find out the hundreds of thousands of your own defects. That's it. Now, the natural question is, if I find out the hundreds and thousands of my own defects, I could become a psychological wreck. Right? We should not see it that way. We should see that these defects are preventing me from advancing in bhakti. So as long as I'm not aware of them, then I'm away from Krishna. So if someone makes me aware of them, or if I become aware of them somehow, that means I can work on it and get another step closer to Krishna, so we should be happy. Right? We should want to know. I should want to know. Just like if you met Krishna, you could ask him a question. So, Krishna, what's getting in the way between you and me? And then he points out, it's this, it's this, it's this. That would be good to know. You wouldn't become depressed. You'd think, thank you. Now I can work on this. Simple, isn't it? And then we can offer that to Krishna. Krishna, I'm sure I am so ashamed of these defects. I am such a rascal. I'm so low. So please help me. But it's not that a devotee becomes depressed. If you actually think about it, pride is the real cause of misery, not humility. If we're thinking, oh, if I'm humble, you know, I'll be aware of my defects and I'll be miserable. No, but pride is what really hurts us. Because then we have to go around convincing everybody that we're great. And then we have to go around wondering if everybody thinks we're great. Did they notice how great that kirtan was? And I led the kirtan and nobody told me it was great. Now I'm depressed. I'm discouraged. Yes?
When you're talking, it reminds me of a point that pride means expectations. Whereas humility means without expectations, or at least without, in the mood of not having expectations.
For others.
Yeah.
To behave in a certain way.
Yeah. When you're proud, it seems like you're expecting certain things from certain people. When it doesn't happen, you become upset. Or when something happens you don't like, you also become upset.
Yeah. I mean, also part of that is we create our own standards by which we will judge others. These are my standards. We were mentioning in the class on forgiveness a very interesting point, that we judge others by standards. Here are the standards by which I judge you. And we judge ourselves by practicality. And what that means is, in our life we look at what we do and say, well, why didn't you clean up the room. Say, well, I was late, I had an important call, or there was an emergency, so it wasn't practical. And I come to your room and I go, oh, Maharaj lives in a dirty room. He's a messy person. So I have my standard, but then you have your standard. Well, it wasn't practical. So we judge ourselves by what is practical, and we judge others by a standard. Better we judge ourselves by a standard and then be generous towards others. Right? So, I said on the first day that we did this class, there were two things I was hoping would happen. One of them, I was hoping that by hearing about humility, what it is, glorifying it, discussing it, that we would develop some desire to achieve it. Because if we don't have some desire or some attraction for it, it's not going to develop. And we'll look at all this and we'll go, yeah, but that's, you know, it's not realistic. I'm not in that platform. You don't know how fallen I am, and so forth. So if there's some desire for it, then it's going to be achievable. And the second hope I had was that we can start to develop the attitudes of the humble person and realize it's a choice. The attitude's a choice. You may think, well, how can I think like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was thinking? But it's a choice. You can choose to see the fault. You can choose to see the good. You can choose to see the sincerity in that person. You can choose to overlook what fault you think you're seeing. You can choose to focus on the good. It's an attitude. Like we were talking this morning, the attitude of gratitude. You can choose to be grateful. It's an attitude you can develop, a frame of mind. So that's my hope, that we develop that. Yes?
I was thinking when you were talking about developing this humility, isn't it simply by devotion of service, all the good qualities come? You're making the point that we have to work on developing this quality of humility. But we always stress it simply to bhakti yoga, and by doing devotion of service, then all these good qualities automatically develop.
Yes, both are true. Well, he's asking, isn't it just by bhakti that we'll develop it? That's true. And do we have to work on it? That is bhakti. You know, you have sadhaka and you have sadhya. So, the goal is humility and the practice is humility. The goal is to chant constantly and the practice is 16 rounds. The goal is to always talk about Krishna, and the practice is to always talk about Krishna. So they, so it is bhakti to be humble, and then by that practice, yes. And so last night a devotee was saying, well, you know, it's not realistic. After this class, we give another class, and said, I don't feel it's realistic. And it can be artificial, that's true. So we don't want to be artificial. And that's why I was feeling that if we developed a proper attitude, then it's less artificial. Then like I see you, and I see you chanting in the kirtan or dancing, and I think, oh, this is wonderful. It's so nice that you're there, you're chanting. And so I don't think that's artificial. It's just an attitude that I choose to appreciate. I find something in you that I can appreciate. That's not really artificial. To maybe come to you and say, Maharaj, please bless me. I'm the most fallen devotee in ISKCON. Maybe that's artificial at this point. But I don't think, you know, humility in general is artificial, because Prabhupada wanted us, you know, to cooperate. And what did Prabhupada say? Whenever there's two men, there's a disagreement. So how do we deal with that? By humility. I'm sorry I said that. Please forgive me. Like that. One of the first things we teach in the forgiveness seminar is that forgiveness is a choice. And many devotees hear that and they think, how is it a choice? I'm hurt, I'm angry, I'm mad. How can I choose not to be mad? You can be, you can choose. It's actually a choice. You choose how you react. There's an event and there's a choice, and in between the event and the choice is a decision. And how you're going to choose to react. Yes. Say that again.
We said before, when is the right time to correct other people? When somebody does something wrong, and whether we are entitled to correct them.
And someone has something wrong. They do something wrong.
Are we to correct them?
I have seen that
in my personal experience, by the other devotee's mercy, with time, I am like starting to float in something which is like this quality of humility is like a person who is surrounding us by the mercy of other devotees.
No, humility is like a person?
Yeah, she's a person.
Oh, humility personified.
It's something which is real, who is there, and it comes by the mercy. Oh. So in the moment you see someone who is doing something wrong, or you see something, if you are attached to the devotees or you are attached to Krishna, instead of reacting whimsically, in that moment you obviously you think of whom you are attached. So if you are attached to the devotees and Krishna, automatically you draw from that essence, because it comes through the devotees automatically, and you think, oh, am I entitled to say something or to behave? And I don't know, it's not my quality. I know it's by mercy. I just immediately go back and I think, maybe by my own character I would immediately say, that is not proper, why are they doing this, you know. But because of the mercy, I am like merging into this humility thing. Oh. And I'm thinking, oh,
you're feeling,
I become very humble, very small, because I'm afraid to come out with my arrogant nature, and I enjoy this. I get into this humble thing and I'm so happy, and I'm thinking, oh, so now what am I supposed to do? And I'm thinking, Krishna, what should I do? You are here, this is regarding your service, the relationship with the devotees, what shall I do? Or I pray to Guru. And then the inspiration comes, Krishna gives the proper intelligence, which is the right way, the right moment, and the right attitude. But He does give you the service.
So what you're saying is, because you have the desire, the kripa comes, the mercy comes, the intelligence to deal with the wrong mentality and purify it and see properly. Yes, that's wonderful.
Krishna gives you the service. Yes. If you are detached and you try to be humble, not artificially, because you get through this through mercy.
Yeah, so that counteracts the first problem where we're reading how difficult it is to give up pride. Mm-hmm. But by desire and mercy, then we get the proper vision.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. You have a question? Question from the audience. You have a question too. Microphone.
You said that in at our level of practice, we must to practice humility as our sadhana. I agree. But there are many definitions of humility which we can practice, and it is very high level to define humility as I am a most fallen person in the universe.
Yes.
Maybe for our level, for my level, it is more practical to practice another definition of humility.
Well, I gave a definition. He's asking, well, he's saying, to think I'm the most fallen is not practical. We read yesterday, the day before, Bhaktisiddhanta defined what Mahaprabhu said when we should chant in the humble state of mind. He said, you should be helpless to think, Krishna, I can't do this myself. I can't do this on my own. I'm helpless. So that's a kind of humility, that I'm helpless. I need your help. So that's very practical for us. Not be, to be conceited in thinking, I'm very strong, I'm very great, I can do this. But Krishna, I'm helpless. I depend on you. I don't have the qualifications to love you. I depend on you. That's how to chant in a humble state of mind. So we have a question from the internet.
So Mukunda Guru from Spain, who he's been following the seminar as far as I can tell, he's asking, he's offering obeisances, and he's asking, please can you tell me, if we see something wrong and I don't correct the attitude,
in ourselves?
Something wrong in others. I'll just paraphrase it. If you see something wrong in others and you don't correct it, then it could be that the same thing we will do later at some other time. So what to do if we're not qualified to correct, or what is the right way to correct, or what is the right way to act?
There's two ways to look at it. One way, Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, the world doesn't need another reformer. There's already a good reformer, that's Krishna. So one way is to recognize maybe that something that I can't correct, maybe something no one can correct other than Krishna, and I have to have that faith. That's one attitude. Sometimes there are situations which nobody can change, and only Krishna can change. And so we have to go on, just wait, because we can't do anything. And then there are other situations in which we have to use our intelligence and think, well, what will be the best way to deal with this? Talk to, who should I talk to about it? Or how can I approach the person? Or who can approach the person? And how can I best express my concerns? And in either case, you have to realize that you can only have the best intentions and do what you can and then pray. You want to say, you have anything else to say? Anybody? Maharaj, can you do me a favor? Can you sit here for now? Because I ate too much salad, and I have to go take care of the salad I ate too much. Would you mind sitting here? Just to continue the discussion? And I'll come back in 10 minutes? No, it'll be better. You'll have to excuse me.
I'm simply doing this because he's requesting. Discussion, yes?
Related to that question by Mukunda Guru. There's a Christian prayer, Lord, please give me the courage to change the things that I can. What's the other part?
Please give me the...
Oh, yeah.
But to give me something to accept the things I cannot. The faith? Wisdom is the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, that's...
The serenity. Yeah.
I think that's St. Francis, right?
Yes.
St. Francis of Assisi also, I think, said that.
Give me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
So I think it's the wisdom part that's important. what is the wisdom that is required to be able to discriminate between what you can change and what you can't change. So you want me to say something in regards to that? Is there someone would like to comment on that? Yes? Yeah, please. I'll come back to that.
I have a question on envy. Earlier Prabhu was saying that envy is against bhakti. Envy is against bhakti. You cannot develop bhakti.
Envy is against bhakti, yes.
Yeah. So what happens if somebody is like so close to you and they're envious of you? And even though you encourage them in Krishna consciousness and you give them all the love you can, but they still don't give up that anatta. How do you deal with that?
Somebody who is real close to you and you have a relationship with them and you can feel that there is envy there. Well, you have to be sure that's what it is.
They have disclosed it, sir.
It's obvious. It happens over and over again. Well, envy, first of all, I may have to explore what is the definition of envy. Envy is to become unhappy because certain people have certain qualifications or certain successes. And then I become an envy or unhappy because of that. And then I feel slighted or in a lesser position. Or, Prabhupada uses the definition of envy, is just like when you don't want someone to do something that they usually do. Just like to kill animals is a symptom of enviousness, that you're depriving that person from the right to life. So you're just simply envious of that person's existence. In that case, an animal or another human being. So what is envy? Envy starts from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Prabhupada said. That's the reason we come to this material world, because we have some difficulty with Krishna being who he is. And we also want to be the enjoyer. So due to that, we get the opportunity to fulfill that desire, therefore we come to this material world. And then there is competition between the living entities in this material world in the same way that we have that same problem with Krishna. So that enviousness starts with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So your question is how to deal with you feeling someone is... You have to somehow or other make sure it's envy. And if it's clear that it's envy, well, what is the nature of that envy? I mean, how is it being manifested? Is it malicious? Or is it just a subtle desire that they don't like something about you or something that you're doing? Then if it's malicious, then obviously one has to deal with that in such a way that that person doesn't continue, because that also, that envious nature destroys them also, and the person, both. So it's a question of what is the nature of how it's manifested. A husband may be envious of his wife because the wife is more spiritually advanced, and she can maybe sense that. So what can she do? She can encourage her husband also to become more, you know, in other words, become more advanced himself, in a very compassionate, loving way that a wife would do, in such a way that the husband doesn't feel like he's being controlled. So how you deal with that is really the principle. I think that's the whole thing. In terms of correction, it's a matter of correction again. How are you going to correct that? And whether it needs correction or not. Is it so disturbing that it actually is causing a discord in the relationship? That's the question. I can't speak so generally.
I just feel like I've tried to encourage them in Krishna consciousness. I try to give them the whole process that I've followed in every, you know, what Prabhupada's teachings are, how we can develop bhakti.
We have to be an example. An example, example is higher than precept, in the sense that by example, we can change a person by showing what is the ideal as opposed to pointing it out, and we may not even be the ideal ourselves. So the best preaching, or the best way to make a person understand what is correct, is to live what you actually believe is right in your relationship with God. If it becomes malicious or detrimental, it's causing the, and one can speak something in a way that, if you have a close relationship with someone, obviously there must be some understanding of how to deal with each other. So therefore, in that understanding, one has to communicate. But this is not good. We can't just assume things. We have to also express things. If a parent is watching a child do something wrong and thinking, well, I don't want to find fault in my child, well, that would be foolish, right? In the same way of a husband or wife or two persons that are very close, they can speak. Because there is a relationship there, the communication should be pleasing, at the same time easy to make your point. When there's not a relationship, that's the hard part. That's the difficulty.
Maharaj, if I can just ask you, envy is an anatta we had from the spiritual world. So, like, while performing devotional service, and when we surrender to Krishna, doesn't Krishna say that he takes the sinful reactions? So how do we understand that one becomes free from envy?
How do we become free from envy? How do we understand when we are free from envy?
Yes.
When we are always happy. When we're happy. Devotional service means to become happy. And when you're happy to be with devotees, when you're happy to be with to chant the holy names, when you're actually feeling pleasure in the process, you're actually free from the anarthas. Envy is the root cause of all the anarthas. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, in lust there is anger. In anger there is lust. In greed there's lust and anger. In illusion there's lust, anger, and greed. In pride, there is lust, anger, greed, and illusion, and envy, you get it all. So envy is what causes us to come into this material world. So envy can be, what we say, destroyed through humble service. If you feel envious towards a person, just serve that person nicely. And that will help to overcome the principle of envy. Then when you start to serve that person, you'll actually feel affection for that person. So that's the antidote for envy. Mahatma Prabhu, would you please come back? I don't mind, but I feel a little embarrassed because I can't... All right, I'll do it. If you feel comfortable, okay. We're just taking questions. Yes, Mataji.
Maharaj, what's the difference if we are jealous of people? Like, not envious, but jealous.
It's the same thing. Jealousy is a symptom of envy, but it's not as what we say. Jealousy can be an incident. Envy could be something that is an anartha. You can be jealous and not jealous. But if you're envious, you're going to be envious in different situations like that. Envious is an anartha. Jealousy is a symptom of that envy, that's all. But how to overcome jealousy? To be happy in another person's success. We're on the same team as devotees. It's not like we're trying to compete with each other to be better than that. What Mahatma said was really powerful. He said, don't try to be great, just try to be good. And that's what Krishna consciousness is about. And I was thinking, yeah, trying to be good means to work on yourself. Trying to be great means to try to do so many things. So we get into the doer mentality rather than working on ourselves. And as we work on ourselves, our qualities come out. And then Krishna works through us to do so many things. So the same success comes by doing when we work on ourselves, as opposed to thinking, well, I got to do this, but I'm not so concerned about working on myself. I'm just doing this, and I'm doing this service, I'm trying to achieve, I'm trying to accomplish, I'm trying to do so many things. That comes simultaneously as we purify our consciousness. Whatever you do that is in line with the principles of bhakti stands the test of time. Whatever we do under the false ego, that may have some immediate results, but in the long run, it doesn't satisfy, nor does it stand. Did you follow that? It makes sense? Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
In this wonderful seminar, we get so many good advices of acharyas, but I have some doubt that Sri Prabhupada not so many attention gives to practice humility, but some more common instructions we have from Sri Prabhupada about devotional service, and that humility is just to try to sincerely serve your spiritual master, senior devotees. I have some doubt.
The emphasis is more on doing than on developing qualities. Is that your question? Like, when you hear Srila Prabhupada speak, he speaks more about, you know, activities, principles, as opposed to qualities. Is that your question? I think he does both. If you really see, at least from my experience, you know, Prabhupada quotes that verse from the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, 8 through 12. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsam. And the first thing is amanitvam, which is humility, which is a principle of knowledge. When I first read that, I was astounded. How could humility be considered a principle of knowledge? But actually, humility is not something outside of bhakti. It is bhakti itself. It's not separate from bhakti. Without humility, there's really no bhakti. Bhakti doesn't manifest until someone actually is humbly serving, cultivating the quality of humility in their service. So it's fundamental to everything we do. Lord Chaitanya emphasized that verse, Janata Pisini Chinna. He said, string it on the necklace of the holy name and wear it as your ornament. So if we carefully go through the statements of Prabhupada and the scriptures, we'll find out there is a lot of emphasis on the qualities of a Vaishnava, a lot. And humility is the foremost, that's why it's mentioned in that relationship, or in that order. Humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for others is given, what we say, the emphasis of everything we do. In order to become steady in devotional service, one has to cultivate those qualities. Otherwise, there's no question of developing ruchi, or a higher taste. Because the principle of steadiness is the principle of that verse. One becomes steady by cultivating that humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and giving respect to others. Otherwise, we're just like, we go for a little while, and then we fall back again, and we go for a little while. But by cultivating these qualities, we remain steady in our devotional service. Then things become easier or natural. So yes, Prabhupada does talk about it in relationship to everything else. Does that make sense? Yes, Mahatma? This is your class, so I'm just...
I used to think just like he thought. And I think
I think part of the reason we think that way is because sometimes Prabhupada teaches something, but we don't see it manifest broadly in ISKCON, so then we think he didn't teach it or it's not important. And I thought exactly like that. And one day I was thinking, why didn't Prabhupada put more emphasis on humility because it's so important? So then I went to his books and realized that I didn't want to become humble, so I overlooked all the things that he said about it. And he said so much about it. And I realized it was actually my defect. So I think it's also, you know, it can be an eternal defect or just it's not stressed enough in some places, so we don't think Prabhupada stressed it.
So it's we're seeing according to our own, you know, vision. A nice point, thank you. Yeah, we tend to emphasize or see what we think is important. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. Question from the internet.
From the internet, yes. So Mukunda Prabhu from Spain wants to know, Maharaj, please can you explain again the difference between good envy and bad envy?
Good envy and bad envy. I think we just created some new terms there. Let's see. You're going to have to help me on this one. Good envy and bad envy. Prabhupada says you can dovetail lust, you can dovetail anger, greed, illusion, but envy you must destroy. Matsarya, in one lecture, he goes through those five, what they call enemies. He said he gives principles for, you know, allowing the principle to be purified through an aspect of devotion or service, each one of them. But he says envy, the acharyas say one has to eliminate that. And that's done by loving devotional service, by serving Vaishnavas, by humbly serving the Vaishnavas, and being satisfied with one's situation. When one is satisfied, whoever they are and whatever Krishna... Radhanathaswami said something really amazing about envy, which really gave me a real amazing... He said, if you don't like what somebody else is about, that means your problem is not so much with that person, it's with Krishna, because Krishna is arranging for everyone to be whoever they are and get whatever they want. So you don't like what Krishna is doing to that person, so your problem is with Krishna. When I heard that, I said, wow, that makes sense, because ultimately Krishna is controlling everything, and he's giving and allowing people to be who they are, do whatever they're doing. So our problem is when we have a problem with another person, really our problem is a reflection in our relation with Krishna. So there's no such thing as good envy. One has to get rid of envy.
I think he might be referring good envy, and of course I'm not speaking to him, so I'm not sure, but putting myself in his shoes, I'm thinking maybe good envy would be something like
appreciating
someone, and because there is no special word, like you will say, oh, I envy you, but actually it's meant as a glorification. It's not meant as I wish you harm. Or
right.
Wish you ill. It's just, I wish I had your spiritual advancement. So it's not an envy, let me serve your feet. I would like to be as advanced as you are. I envy your position. But there's no malice there. So I think that's what he was referring to as good envy.
And then in that case, if you have good envy, you should be that it will increase and inspire your devotional service and not reduce it and not be offensive. Yes, that's a good point. A person's doing wonderful service, you might think, let me also do wonderful service.
I have another comment here from Belgium. This one is a comment, not a question. Humility is essential to full surrender to Krishna. Before that, it requires strong conviction, Vishvasha, to follow Anukulyasya and avoid Pratikulyasya for devotional service. The main thing is to remember always Krishna. This is process of humility. In Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22.1.13, always remember and never forget him. If there is remember, then there is no question for forget. why it is stressed, both always remember and never forget. Oh, so there is a question. Why is it stressed, always remember and never forget?
I'm going to try to philosophically speculate on this one and see if there's anyone else that could help with that same answer. Whenever you stress a positive, you always have to understand what is the negative. It's like Prabhupada says, the Supreme Absolute Truth has both, what we say, infinite qualities and finite qualities. So without, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is infinite, there is also qualities of finite within Him, which makes the Absolute Truth perfect, because it has both aspects of existence. Yes, if you always remember, you never forget. But if you're forgetting, that means you remember that you're forgetting. So then that helps you to remember again. If I'm forgetting, then I should be remembering. I'm forgetting now, so I should be remembering. Does that make sense?
You're remembering that
I'm
forgetting.
Yeah, I'm remembering that I'm forgetting, yes. So I'm forgetting Krishna. I'm forgetting Krishna, therefore I should remember Krishna. And if I'm always remembering Krishna, then automatically I'm not forgetting Krishna, but if I happen to forget Krishna, then I should be remembering Krishna. So the forgetfulness is a reminder to remember when we're in that mindset. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj.
I mean, you can say something. It seems like, you know, you go along and you're thinking, I'm not thinking of Krishna. That means I'm forgetting, therefore I should be remembering Krishna. So the forgetfulness is a way of remembering, helping us to remember Krishna. So the negative pushes us towards the positive again.
I have a comment I wanted to make on the opening statements of the class today. We were reading about basically how hopeless the situation is regarding pride, mm-hmm. from Hari Bhakti Sutadaya, wasn't it? And as you were reading, I was thinking how I was thinking about that song actually that I sent you some time ago. It's a non-devotee song, but it says there that you are blessed with whatever you have by God, and that you can accept that because the important thing is the change that you make. So I was thinking about the same thing with pride. It's not so much that we need to completely get rid of it, but to make an effort constantly to try to subdue that pride. And then ultimately, another thought that came to mind is how the mind is also uncontrollable. It's impossible to control the mind, yet, by Krishna's mercy, the mind can be controlled.
Okay.
So there's these two aspects that can be there. So since the mind can be controlled by Krishna, if he desires, Krishna can do anything. Then he can also take away our pride, and he can give it back to us as well.
Yeah. Lord Chaitanya did that. He gave somebody instant love of God. So yes, Mahatma, please comment on that.
I have a story from Bhaktisiddhanta about engaging pride. So once there was a man who would hire workers for his farm work, and they would all quit after a few weeks. So he went to his friend and said, "What should I do?" He said, "Feed them fine rice with ghee." So whenever, because he worked them very hard, so they'd all quit. So he was feeding them fine rice and ghee, but they were still quitting. But a week later, they were coming back because they were addicted to the fine rice and ghee.
And then he'd work them even harder, and then they'd go away for a few days, and then they'd come back, because they were addicted to the fine rice and ghee. So Bhaktisiddhanta told this story, and then he gave the purport. He said, sometimes devotees are motivated by fame and honor and reputation, so the spiritual master puts them in a position where they'll get it, because that's what they desire, and that's what's motivating them in their conditioned state to do service. So sometimes that's engaged. And we saw Prabhupada do similar things. Nobody could, you know, one devotee said to Prabhupada, I can't work with anybody. And Prabhupada said, then you become GBC. So he did things like that, you know, to engage the fault, to motivate the person in the hopes that they would become purified of that.
He did that with one senior devotee, and then the senior devotee said, Prabhupada, why are you sending me away? He said, no, I just see you have so many good qualities and you can be preaching instead of doing personal service. But the devotee didn't accept that. He was thinking, Prabhupada is sending me away.
And sometimes, well, Krishna gives you, he'll give you what you want sometimes when you really, you're doing devotional service and you still want something material, maybe some position or some power or some distinction, some fame. Then when you get it, you realize it's really not what I want, because it doesn't satisfy the heart, and it doesn't fulfill the desire you thought you could fulfill by receiving that. And then you become serious in devotional service. For some people he does that, and for others he knows that by doing that it's dangerous, so he doesn't do it. It's a matter of individual. This is a wonderful topic. It's the most important topic. It covers everything. Because I was saying, I also had a realization when you were speaking that we're trying to do so many things in order to spread Krishna consciousness, but the real thing is to purify the heart. Because as the heart becomes purified through the process of devotional service, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, Krishna works through that purified soul to do so many things. So the same thing happens, but in a more complete way. We're actually trying to do things, but we can actually do things in spreading Krishna consciousness by becoming pure, or by working on ourselves. So really, Krishna consciousness really means to work on yourself. There's a question in the back.
We talk about false pride, so I was wondering if there's a true pride and if that's okay.
True pride?
True pride. So we talk about pride, false pride.
I can only answer what Prabhupada answered. Someone asked the same question. He said, I'm proud that Krishna is God and Krishna is great and I'm his servant. You have to have pride in Krishna. Krishna is so merciful, Krishna is so wonderful, Krishna is so kind. Krishna is the Lord. In other words, there's a sense of pride which is spiritual in relationship to Krishna. But still, we don't think ourselves great. And the fact that somehow we became engaged in devotional service, we have somehow became fortunate to get the mercy. It's not pride in ourselves, it's pride in Krishna. I have a wonderful spiritual master. I have a wonderful association with devotees. That kind of pride. It's not about oneself. It's about the mercy that one receives. Does that make sense? Yes? Hare Krishna. There's two questions here.
I can understand the different bad qualities. I have very clear vision of what is anger, what is lust, what is greed, I have so much difficulty understanding what is envy. It's like a fish that slips out of my mind. I can't catch it. I can't understand what is this quality.
Envy means you're unhappy when you see someone having something or doing something. Either you want it or you don't want them to have it. Either one.
That is jealousy, no?
Yeah, that's also, that's
jealousy is more like envy is full-blown jealousy. But jealousy can come and go. We're envious. Envy is a characteristic we've imbibed due to our association with the material energy. It's more deep-rooted. Or, as I mentioned earlier, you just don't like, just like Prabhupada said, animal killing is a symptom of envy. God has given you the right to exist, and I don't want you to exist. I'm envious of your existence. I'm envious of your qualities. I'm envious of your existence. I'm not happy with my situation. I want what you have, I don't want you to have what you have. I want what you have, or I don't want you to have what you have. That's envy. Both sides, like that. So what's the antidote? Be satisfied. Krishna is perfect. He's given you exactly what you need when you need it. Just be satisfied and work for that. Don't look outside of yourself for something that may just cause you anxiety and cause you to be envious or unfulfilled. Just be happy, that's all. It's hard. We just say it, but it's not that easy. But who I am, or what I am, or where I am, or what I'm doing, it's all by Krishna's arrangement. And if I'm not happy with myself, then just let me improve. But don't look towards others, you know, as being the source of my unhappiness. Does that make sense? Envy means I don't like what you have, or I want what you have. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada says in business, you know, one businessman is just, there was a, when Prabhupada went to Dainipan, when they were printing the Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada was meeting with the different managers within the structure of Dainipan, and there were seven of them, and they were all speaking to Prabhupada. And then at the end, they all gave Prabhupada their cards. So Prabhupada had seven cards. So Prabhupada was walking out, because they were all bidding for the contract to work on, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada was talking to one of them who walked out with him, and Prabhupada said, "What is your goal in life?" You know, Prabhupada's going to see a person as a soul rather than as a business person also. So the man said to Prabhupada, "Give me those cards." Prabhupada was holding them in hand. So he took the cards, and he took his card and put it on the top and gave it back to Prabhupada. And that's how he answered Prabhupada's question. "I want to be the top man." So that's the way it is in this material world. Everyone wants to be better than others. No one's satisfied. And ultimately, everyone wants to be God. What is God? God is the enjoyer. God is the controller. So when we try to control and enjoy for our own satisfaction, that is a symptom of envy. When we relinquish that consciousness and submit ourselves to the process of devotional service and allow Krishna to take charge of our life, we're actually becoming free from that propensity of envy. Yes? Yes, I'm sorry.
One of the definitions I read the Prabhupada gave
was, in spite of the existence of good qualities that a person has, you won't acknowledge it.
In spite of.
You remember that story he told about, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta told that someone became a high court judge, and the friends who were envious said, "It's not possible." He said, no, he did. Then the envious friend said, then they're not paying him. He just couldn't acknowledge that the person had any qualification to do it. So then therefore Prabhupada says, when, despite a person's good qualities, you won't recognize that they have any, That's another example of envious.
Another example. Does that help? Just be satisfied, that's all. If we're satisfied, we're happy. Satisfied with the prasadam we get, with the association Krishna gives us, with the opportunity to chant Hare Krishna, with the opportunity to engage in devotional stuff. Just be satisfied. When we learn to become satisfied with what Krishna is giving us, and then we're starting to free ourselves from envy. Please let me know when I should stop.
When the question's
done. Okay.
Or there's nobody left
there. All right.
Yes. A question from Belgium, from Ratan Chakrabarti, Peru. He's saying, from the material point of view, we have no quality to realize about gopis' envy for Krishna. They, the gopis, having also envy and great envy for Krishna.
No. There's no material envy in the gopis. Gopis are always trying to satisfy Krishna. And the gopis dress up nicely, not for themselves, but for Krishna's pleasure. It's not that they're trying to compete with Krishna. Gopis are pure, in that whatever they do, it's always for Krishna's pleasure, even though it looks like they're doing it for themselves. Prabhupada used that example. They dress really nicely, and they really make themselves look as nice, but they're not thinking, I want to look nice for myself, because I know Krishna appreciates me looking very nice, so I want to look nice for Krishna. So the gopis, whatever the gopis are doing, you have to understand that they're motivated by pure love. If you're seeing something different in that, then you're not understanding the position of the gopis.
While we're on the gopi subject, with the relationship between Chandravali's camp and Radharani, would there be some envy there?
No, that's spiritual. What we say, competition in order to give Krishna more and more pleasure. There is variety in the spiritual world, so when this competition increases, the loving exchanges between Krishna. Just like an example was Radharani was waiting for Krishna. And she was waiting. Finally she said to Lalita, Krishna is not coming. So go see what's holding up Krishna. So she went to the other camp of Chandravali and saw that Krishna was with another gopi. And then Krishna was caught. And she went back and told Radharani. Radharani didn't want to have anything to do with Krishna. So she took everything blue and threw it away. She has a blue bird, a blue bird cage. She has a blue sari. She got rid of it. She didn't want to see the Jamuna anymore. Anything that reminded her of the Krishna's color, she simply, got rid of. And Krishna is apparently in anxiety. So how to get Radharani's love back? So he does different things. And finally, it's a very wonderful pastime. He again somehow pacifies Radharani. So that increases the loving relationship. So Radharani knows when I get mad at Krishna, it makes him happy. She's not. When we get mad at someone or we act in a different way, it's actually out of our own ego. But Radharani is doing that just to please Krishna. We have to accept the words of the acharyas. Otherwise, we see through our materialistic vision. We have experiences on this level. We project it on the spiritual level. So as Prabhupada said earlier, which I mentioned, there is no envy in the spiritual world. Envy belongs in the material world. If you actually take the definition of envy.
Thank you, Lord.
Hare Krishna. Is there another question from the internet? No. Okay, so I think in order to end the class according to my instructions, no more questions. And we all have to thank Mahatma for his wonderful 4-day seminar. I think not only was it well presented, I came to 2 classes and I was inspired by both, but it's the most needed subject. That's the thing. It's so important to discuss the qualities that we want to develop, because really the qualities of the Vaishnavas make devotional service what it is. It's not about achievements. We've seen that there's been so many achievers in our movement, but it's not, that doesn't make one a devotee. It may show certain qualities and characteristics, but the real quality, characteristics that pleases the Lord and spreads Krishna consciousness, is the qualities that make a Vaishnava what is a real Vaishnava. So when we discuss these things, we're actually getting into the essence of how to make spiritual advancement. Then we can chant Hare Krishna. Then we can have better relationships with devotees. Thank you, Mahatma Prabhu. This is a wonderful seminar. And we are indebted, I'm sure all the devotees are indebted to your knowledge and your humility in presenting this, because when you speak about humility, it's the most hardest thing, because you sound like, I mean, I'm talking about myself, we have to be an example of what we're speaking about, or at least try to be that example. And I've heard Radha Swami speak about humility for like 2 hours, and at the end of the class he says, I'm simply speaking theoretically, that's all. So, it's very difficult to come up to the stage as you introduce the class, but that's what Krishna consciousness is about. It's a constant endeavor to purify the heart more and more by going finer and finer into the qualities of the Vaishnava. And then we can approach Krishna more and more in His holy name. So on behalf of all the devotees, I'm glad you put me up here so I can thank you for your wonderful ceremony, wonderful seminar, and the way you expressed it was really extremely interesting. I must honestly say I was sitting there, I was getting so inspired, and I was really having a hard time refraining from saying things, because I really wanted to listen as much as I could, and it was very, very inspiring. So let's all thank Mahatma Prabhu by chanting Hariyo, 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 Mahatma Prabhu Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thank you. And we can't wait till the next seminar.
I want to do it for 2 or 3 days and really, really good.
It was excellent, and it was well documented, well presented. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai.
Vishnu Bhakti Bhare Devi Shakti.